All right. Hello. I see we're a small group here tonight. Don, Regina, and Jay. and Shauna. Hello. I just arrived in La Vida a little bit ago. So I'm here in the condo now, and I don't have internet. So that's why you've probably seen me on the phone, but I'm on my hotspot now so that I wouldn't have to teach on the phone. And it might be due to the weather. It's kind of rainy here today. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at consciousness and the absolute. There's a conversation from October 5th. It's a short conversation. So we'll probably look at this short conversation, and then if there's still time in this half hour, we'll jump over and look at a couple quotes from the Nisargadatta Gita. This conversation is from October 5th, 1980, and there's no questioner, so it's actually not a conversation. It's just Nisargadatta Maharaj speaking. So why don't I, it's really short, why don't I read the whole thing just to get everything without any comments from Regina, and then we'll go back and see if there's any pieces we want to look at. So Nisargadatta says, I have no individuality. I have assumed no pose as a person. Whatever happens in the manifest consciousness happens. People identify me with their concepts, and they do what their concepts tell them. It is consciousness which is manifest, nothing else. Who is talking? Who is walking? Who is sitting? These are the expressions of that chemical, I am. Are you that chemical? You talk about heaven and hell, this Mahatma or that one. But how about you? Who are you? In meditation, one sees a lot of visions. They are in the chemical, the realm of your consciousness. Are they not? And Jay, I'm on the bottom of page 8, just now switching to page 9. All these things are connected only to that birth chemical. You are not this chemical, I am. Spiritual knowledge should not be studied. It is knowledge derived from listening. When the listener hears it and accepts it, something clicks in him. This I amness is otherness. It is an expression of duality. And that's the end of the little dialogue. So not much there, but we're going to go back and look at it very slowly. And who knows, it might even eat up a whole half an hour. So he begins by saying, I have no individuality. I have assumed no pose as a person. Whatever happens in the manifest consciousness happens. So in the Buddhism class, which right now several people are in, at the end of the Buddhism class, they will learn about something called interdependent co-arising. And if anybody happens to hear this audio, because there's nobody in the room right now, except for a few of us. So if anybody happens to hear this audio later, and you happen to be in the Buddhism class in MPP, when you get to the chapters on interdependent co-arising, what I recommend is contemplating them very deeply. Take time. Don't try to rush through your homework. Contemplate them very deeply. Because if you contemplate interdependent co-arising very deeply, you will see there's no such thing as an individual. And that's what Nisargadatta is saying here. When he says whatever happens in the manifest consciousness happens, that sentence is in the same paragraph in this book It's really a three-sentence paragraph. I have no individuality. I have assumed no pose as a person. Whatever happens in the manifest consciousness happens. That's all in one paragraph, which means when he says whatever happens in the manifest consciousness happens, he's referring to the apparent person of Nisargadatta, as well as any other person. But in this moment, he's talking about the person. I heard George today when George was teaching. I heard George make a comment. He says, I've seen videos of Nisargadatta. And when I see Nisargadatta, I see a person, right? And that's exactly what Nisargadatta is referring to, is that he appears to be a person. But he is not. What we see as the appearance of Nisargadatta and every other person, including this one speaking right now, is actually just interdependent co-arising. I hate to use all the same old words. I mean, we could say it's the script, we could say it's the code, but what it really is consciousness unfolding in alignment with believing attention of consciousness. It's consciousness unfolding in alignment with believing attention of consciousness. And, you know, when consciousness unfolds, it unfolds, you know, in duality. It unfolds both as what we would call wrong-minded things, and it unfolds as what we would call right-minded things. You could say it unfolds as miscreations, and it unfolds as grace, right? It unfolds as things that point more deeply toward illusion, and it unfolds as things that point toward truth. But in spite of that, there is no difference whatsoever, other than the fact that, you know, some points towards illusion and some points towards truth, and some is wrong-minded and some is right-minded and some is miscreation and some is grace. There's really no difference whatsoever, because it's all the unfolding of consciousness based on consciousness's attention. You know, in A Course in Miracles, if you look at the Foundation for Inner Peace version of A Course in Miracles, what they have done is they have said that the ego projects and the Holy Spirit extends. Two different words. The ego projects and the Holy Spirit extends. And I clearly understand why they did that. And when I say they did that, it's because it wasn't that way in the original receiving of A Course in Miracles. It wasn't consistent. Sometimes it would say Holy Spirit projects, right? It wasn't consistent. And it was Ken Wapnick and Helen, what's her name? They got together and decided to make it consistent. That was a change they made later, so that it always says Holy Spirit extends and ego projects. And I understand kind of why they did that, but to a point, it's a disservice. And the reason it's a disservice is because when people read that in their ignorance, they think there's a difference between extension and projection, when actually there isn't. It's the exact same process. It's the exact same process of consciousness giving attention and then the unfolding of consciousness according to its attention. The only apparent difference is, again, that the projection would be wrong-minded or miscreations or pointing towards illusion, and the extension would be right-minded, grace pointing towards truth. But you know, I want to use the word, the mechanical nature of what's going on is the exact same mechanical nature. It's not two different mechanics, one called projection and one called extension. So when Nisargadatta says, I have no individuality, I have assumed no pose as a person, Whatever happens in the manifest consciousness happens. What he is saying is this being that we see as Nisargadatta Maharaj really is just the unfolding of consciousness, and it's unfolding in the way that it unfolds because of everything else that's happening in consciousness. In fact, one thing that Nisargadatta says in I Am That is everything makes everything, right? Nothing has a particular cause. And that even includes this apparent being of Nisargadatta. You know, we could criticize Nisargadatta, right? You know, we could compare him with a judgmental mind to Ramana Maharshi. And we could say Ramana Maharshi was always so peaceful and calm and gentle, and Nisargadatta was like a crazy man yelling at people, you know, sometimes throwing people out of his loft, you know, and he just was not as good of a teacher, you know, was not as good of an example of a teacher, an example of love as Ramana Maharshi. And we can do that if we want to. But the point is that Nisargadatta, what we see as Nisargadatta, and Ramana Maharshi, what we see as Ramana Maharshi, are the unfolding of consciousness. They're not persons. And they unfolded in the way that they unfolded because of everything else that's happening in consciousness. So when we are, if we were to judge Nisargadatta for, you know, being a smart aleck and you know, yelling and screaming and acting like a crazy man, we're doing that out of our belief in personhood. And we don't have an understanding of what's happening. And again, it's not just Nisargadatta and Ramana Maharshi that are the unfolding of consciousness. It's actually each of us too. In fact, if you take the MPP class on Kabbalah, Introduction to Kabbalistic Thought, or whatever we call that class, you will learn about creation as a verb, not creation, but creationing. So the way that they would word it is, for example, I am not Regina, I am Regina-ing, which means the Regina thing is unfolding. The Regina thing is constantly being created. And you're not Don, you're Donine and Ronine and Michelle-ing and Jay-ing and Shauna-ing, right? The belief that we are a person is the mistake. Right? So Nisargadatta is saying, I have no individuality. I have assumed no pose as a person. Whatever happens in the manifest consciousness happens. So he is Nisargadatta-ing. Right? Nisargadatta-ing. That's kind of fun to say. He continues, people identify me with their concepts, and they do what their concepts tell them. It is consciousness which is manifest, nothing else. So concepts, of course, are the thoughts in the mind. So let's say, for example, that I happen to go to Ramana Ashram. This would have had to been, you know, several years ago, but I go to Ramana Ashram, I meet Ramana Maharshi. I'm very impressed with Ramana Maharshi. Again, he's such a gentle, kind soul. And then I head further north in India, and I go see Nisargadatta, and he's acting like a crazy man. And my little thoughts are telling me he's not enlightened. He's just a crazy man. And I get up, and I leave. Right? What he is saying is the reason that I got up and left was because I believed the concepts in my mind. I gave believing attention to thought. Had I not given believing attention to thought, I would have stayed and listened, right? And I would have heard something if I had just been there in presence. So he's saying, you know, basically people have different perceptions of me, you know, because of what comes into their mind. But the interesting thing is, it is consciousness which is manifest, nothing else. You know, so that would include Nisargadatta is merely the manifestation of consciousness. The thoughts that come into my mind are no different. They are the manifestation of consciousness. And I am consciousness. And I have a choice as to whether I am going to give my believing attention to a thought or not. People identify me with their concepts, and they do what their concepts tell them. It is consciousness which is manifest, nothing else. And then he says, who is talking? Who is walking? Who is sitting? Right? And that question can apply to Nisargadatta, and that question can apply to the listeners, and that question can apply to each of us, because the answer is the same. Who is talking, or what is talking? Who is walking? Who is sitting? And then he says, these are the expressions of that chemical. He calls it a chemical. I am. And I'm wondering why he calls it a chemical. I'm just going to, you know, he could, again, just be being what the Nisargadatta thing does. But let me see if there's a reason for chemical.
Hey, Regina.
Yes.
It's because of all of his analogies about the film. It's really because chemicals and processing.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the I am chemical then creates the images, right? Thank you for, I would not have gotten there. Thank you for that help. Okay. So the I am chemical then creates the images. So he says, these are expressions of that chemical. I am. Are you that chemical? So are you the I am presence? You talk about heaven and hell, because there are probably Christians in the audience. You talk about this Mahatma or that one, because there were also Hindus in the audience. But how about you? Who are you? So obviously he's pointing to self-inquiry. And he's not giving answers to these questions. He is just pointing to self-inquiry, encouraging people to look within and discover what they are. And the interesting thing is, you know, if you start with the point of view, I'm the person, and you practice self-inquiry, it actually seems quite enlightening when you get to the realization, I'm the I am presence. I'm the awareness, right? That seems quite enlightening. But if we have listened to Nisargadatta's teachings enough, we know that there's actually another point of identification, which would be the absolute. And so again, Nisargadatta is now, the body is dying, and it almost feels like the teachings are getting much more urgent in nature, much more direct, not so much fooling around. So he's really encouraging people to start this inquiry. Find out, are you the I am presence? Right? Find out if that's what you are. He goes on, he says, in meditation, one sees a lot of visions. And you know, a lot of people get very excited about the visions they see in meditation. They think these visions are from the divine, an indication of the divine. It proves they're in contact with God, whatever, right? Nisargadatta says, in meditation, one sees a lot of visions. They are in the chemical. The realm of your consciousness, are they not? What he wants people to notice is these visions that you're getting so excited about are within you. You are greater than your visions, right? Notice this. Notice that the visions are the unfolding of consciousness. Just like I am the unfolding of consciousness. And notice all of this is within you, literally, right? Pay attention to that. And it might be easier to do that. Sometimes it's harder for people to look at the world, to look at Nisargadatta sitting over there and realize that Nisargadatta is within me. So a good place to start is with those visions in meditation. You know, when something begins unfolding in meditation, pause and notice, this is in my mind. This is unfolding in me, right? And the more in meditation that you notice things like the sensations of the body are within consciousness, the images that occur in the mind are within me, the more you pay attention to these types of things during meditation, the more you get to where you can finally open your eyes and look at something that appears to be across the room and realize this is equally within me. Right? This is equally within consciousness. This is equally within awareness. So what am I if the unfolding of consciousness is occurring within me? Right? Can I be consciousness? Or do I need to be beyond consciousness? If the unfolding of consciousness is occurring within me, what am I? This is the question that he's pointing to. And it's a heck of a question. In meditation, one sees a lot of visions. They are in the chemical, the realm of your consciousness. Are they not? All these things are connected only to that birth chemical. You are not this chemical, I am. Right? So he's telling them now that they are not the I am. But really, this is not something that you can learn without your own investigation. Right? It requires your own investigation, your own noticing. And again, at least to me, the simplest way to do it is beginning with the eyes closed. You know, like I think probably for me, the first indication that something that I had perceived as, well, not really outside of me, I had perceived it as me, the body, right? Something that I had perceived as me, the body, it was through meditation, closing the eyes, being as still as possible, focusing on the sensations, noticing the sensations of the body, you know, playing around, maybe noticing a sensation in the throat, noticing a sensation in the foot, noticing a sensation in the body, and the more in the belly, I mean, and the more you notice this, I'm sure you guys know, the more sensations come alive, right? And so pretty soon you can actually feel the entire body. The entire body is just like this universe of sensations. And then noticing with the eyes closed that all of those sensations from the top of the head to the bottom of the feet are within awareness. That I am the awareness that's aware of the sensations. That was the beginning for me of really noticing that I am awareness and the world is in me. And I started playing with that until that became more natural. It didn't feel like I had to really work at being aware of that. And then I began playing with my eyes open and noticing, and I would start with the peripheral vision, noticing that the peripheral vision is within awareness in the same way that the sensations are within awareness. Right? And then I would begin to, after I got good at that, then I would begin to notice things by looking straight at them, which was more of a challenge for me, looking straight at something and noticing that is equally in awareness as these body sensations, as this peripheral vision, right? And the more you play with that, the more you get the sense that everything is within you. And again, if the unfolding of consciousness is happening within me, then what am I? Right? What am I? That's the question. He says, spiritual knowledge should not be studied. It is knowledge derived from listening. So here's what I feel that he means by that. He doesn't want you trying to tackle something with your mind and try and understand it with your mind. That's not the way that spiritual knowledge is received. He wants you to be relaxed, open, present, unthinking, just listening. Because when you're relaxed, open, present, unthinking, just listening, you are being the awareness, right? When you're thinking, when you're studying, you're kind of being the mind. But if you just be the awareness, just relax, just listen. Don't even try to understand. Listen to Nisargadatta teaching or anybody else teaching as if you're listening to music or listening to the birds. Right? When you listen to the birds or to music, you don't try to understand it. You're just listening, right? You're just listening. And if you listen to spiritual teachings like that, it can connect in a different way than if you're trying to understand with the mind. So he seems to be encouraging this open awareness listening. Spiritual knowledge should not be studied. It is knowledge derived from listening. When the listener hears it and accepts it, something clicks in him, right? Because again, you weren't listening with the mind. You were listening with open awareness. This I amness is otherness. It is an expression of duality. So again, he's telling us that the I amness, in effect, is not the truth of what we are. It is not the absolute. It is at least a step away from the absolute, which makes it the first other than the absolute, right? The Son of God instead of God. Right, so it's something else, and so it can't be what we are, and again, he's encouraging our own investigation to find out directly for ourselves, and that is the end of that particular teaching. So, only a couple minutes left, so I don't really think there's now 1 minute less. I don't really think there's time to look at a quote. I thought that we would look at that short thing and then a quote, but I can talk a lot. The unfolding of consciousness just talked a lot. And that's actually true because I didn't have a feeling of trying to think up something to say, right? The saying was just occurring. So it was the unfolding of consciousness. And in that way, we are all equal, right? It's not like just the enlightened ones are the unfolding of consciousness. Everyone is the unfolding of consciousness, both what would be called a projection and what would be called an extension, what would be called miscreation and what would be called grace. It's all the unfolding of consciousness. And with that, I will stop and I will go make a draft post for you, Don, and I will see everyone on Sunday. Have a great weekend.